It's the Burning Up program. Thanks so much for being with us. A couple of days ago, I asked Phil Kincaid to book our next guest, and then we heard from Mary Griffiths and said to Mary, we want to talk with you, and I forgot that we were working both ends on this issue. So Mary Griffith is booked, and she's more than a jury consultant. She is a lawyer who can speak very much to the issue of serving on a jury, and with the Anthony trial about to begin and jury selection going on in Orlando, it makes it even more timely. Mary has also been an actress, I understand, from time to time. She joins us live today on WNDB from Texas. Are you in Dallas, Mary?
I am. Good afternoon.
Good to have you with us. Thank you. How often have you acted?
You know, whenever I can. I've been doing it off and on for the past 10 years, so it's whenever there's an opportunity and my schedule allows, which sometimes it doesn't, I try to get out there and do it.
So do you end up playing a lawyer? Have you been in, like, Texas Walker Ranger, whatever that is?
Right. No, I wasn't in Texas Walker Ranger, but usually I try not to play the lawyer roles, and I've gotten some doctor roles, reporter roles, fun stuff like that.
Okay. Mary, we've done programs in the past with jury consultants. It's a thrill to have you with us. There are many people that look to first get on a jury because they want their 15 minutes, and then other people who have no intention. And the problem is, and I don't know if it's universal, Mary, but you know, you're paid, but just a small pittance compared to what you may earn in the private sector on a daily basis. So particularly with the Anthony trial happening in Orlando, a lot of people, as jury selection goes on, are afraid they could get lassoed into something and then have their personal finances in peril. How do the courts look at that?
Well, usually what the courts will do is that it's, you know, you cannot get fired if you're going to be serving on a jury, but the employer's sort of mindset as far as how they're going to be paying you if you get seated for, like, an Anthony trial where it's 2 months long and these jurors would be sequestered. So that's a lot of time away from their employer. So it will be sort of an employer call about how to handle the finances of that for each juror.
Then you have the other side where the people who want to get on a jury very badly. If you're hired as a consultant with your Texas-based trial consulting enterprises and you're watching, is it easy to pick up somebody who really wants to get on the jury badly and may not belong there?
It gets a little bit trickier. I mean, I think with the Facebook and social media and all of these new things that have come about, there are some jurors out there that are stealth, and they definitely want to get on the jury because with a high-profile case, they're thinking of the back end, you know, the potential television show that they could do, a book, et cetera. So you're really trying to figure out on the front end when you're selecting who those stealth jurors could be.
Mary, with today's 24-hour news channels, How difficult does it become to find somebody who doesn't know about a trial, particularly when it's high profile?
It tends to get a lot more difficult, but I think with such high profile litigation, what our jury research has shown, it's not so much that you haven't heard of the case. I mean, like Michael Jackson's doctor's case, you know, the Casey Anthony case, there are going to be plenty of people who have heard of the case. It's whether or not they have formed those opinions and or beliefs that they will not be allowed or be able in their own decision making to look beyond that and focus actually on the facts and the evidence that are being presented to them during the trial.
For people who may or may not recognize Mary's name, Mary Griffiths was a senior litigation analyst with Dr. Phil's trial science firm, which handled cases such as the Cattleman suit against Oprah Winfrey, along with other high-profile entertainment litigation. Mary, if I may for just a moment, during that time in working with Dr. Phil McGraw, in which Oprah was being sued, what was that experience like in trying to find the right type of jurors for Oprah's defense?
Well, you know, a lot of the pretrial research that, you know, Dr. Phil did and CSI did was what enabled us to find an accurate jury pool for that case, meaning the focus groups, mock trials, finding out community attitude surveys. There was a lot of research that went into finding people who would be beneficial or favorable to our position. So there was a lot of sort of pre-work that went into, you know, when you're seating a jury in such a high-profile case.
You are licensed to practice, I understand, in both Texas and Louisiana?
Correct.
Okay. Are you from Louisiana originally?
I am.
Okay. So do you get to practice very much in Louisiana?
No, not a whole lot. I get to do a lot more jury research in Louisiana than practice.
Okay. Is it different practicing law in Louisiana from Texas?
You know, it's a different Napoleonic code is what governs Louisiana law.
That's what
so
I was getting at. Yeah.
It definitely is. There's differences in the law, absolutely. And then, of course, just, you know, pre-Katrina, post-Katrina, there's been a definite shift in sometimes where you are litigating a particular case because of what that particular community may have gone through. There definitely are some differences.
In Texas, they have... Is their Supreme Court split into two, one to handle civil, one to handle capital? Am I mistaken, or is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. They were contemplating doing that in Florida, but I think they tossed the idea. Is that effective in Texas, having the Supreme Court split twice?
You know, it sort of depends on who you talk to. I mean, I have found it to be beneficial. I think that, you know, whenever you're having too much particular energy put into one area, I think that sometimes what happens is that, you know, the judges know that particular area of the law really, really well, whether it be civil or whether it be criminal. And so I think they bring that, their decision-making style, they bring that history, all of the facts, they bring that to the table, and I think it makes it effective.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Anthony trial from the standpoint of how they go about selecting jurors. And I'm not even aware if they have jury consultants with your experience on this. From Texas, have you watched? Do you know if they have, or would it be assumed they have jury consultants?
I believe that in the Casey Anthony trial, they did have a jury consultant, although I've understood that maybe that consultant is not there for the actual jury selection. I don't know if he left just recently or what the situation is, but I do know that the defense did have a jury consultant that they were using.
Is body language a part of it, Mary?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think whenever you're selecting a jury, you're looking at, from our standpoint, you're looking at not just what the person is saying, but we also look at the people who are listening, the other jurors. It's not just the person talking. It's the other jurors who are listening to that juror answering a question and watching how they're reacting to that particular juror's answer. So that is body language, yes.
My understanding was that they were going to divide up all of the candidates for jury duty and put them into two pools and have them separate so they wouldn't be talking to each other or wouldn't hear each other and perhaps formulate opinions ahead of time. When you have a high-stakes type of trial, Mary, is that the recommended way to go?
It depends. It depends. It can work. It can be beneficial. And I think with recent, like I said, social media and all of these things that are happening, we're just trying to get an understanding of that particular juror, where they stand on different issues. And so narrowing down who you're looking at can be helpful.
Am I correct that when jurors are selected, Mary, you're given so many that you can just dismiss out of hand without reason or cause, or help me with the terminology here, but then there's a challenge. In other words, you get a bye. So many of them you can just say no, ask that they be excused. How does the system work?
Well, there's kind of two types. You definitely have challenges for cause, and that's sort of what you were saying initially. And your challenges for cause would be like, for example, if they're not a United States citizen, they have been a plaintiff in a lawsuit that's the same or similar lawsuit as this particular case, or if they own stock in a corporation and that corporation was being sued, they would have a particular monetary interest in the lawsuit. There's specific things that are definitely what you said was right. They're challenges for cause. They immediately get off. And so then you also have the peremptory challenges, which are the challenges that each side is given a certain amount, and they get to decide how they're going to use that strategically in striking particular jurors that maybe they sense have a bias or an indication one way or the other that they're favoring one side more than the other.
If it is a trial that you're working as a jury consultant and it's a battering thing or a rape, and you have the man on trial who's accused of committing the act, as a jury consultant, do you want to stock it with women, or is it totally the opposite way? You want to stock it with men?
Well, I think there's different viewpoints on that. One of the things that we've known from our jury research is sometimes women have a different criteria in judging other women, and sometimes that criteria can be a harsher a harder criteria. So if, in your example, if there was a rape case per se, I'm not so sure that my research and sort of my experience would be that I would be favoring putting a majority of women on the panel. Now, it would also depend on the case-specific facts of that, you know, exactly what happened for that particular crime. But for gender analysis, it's not so easy just to say, okay, with a rape case, we're going to put more women, because sometimes women can be definitely a lot more critical in their evaluation of other women.
Well, to bring it home, Mary, in the case here where it is a child that was killed and that the mother is on trial, specifically, do you want, if you're part of the prosecution, mm-hmm. let's take it that way, is it to your best interest that the jury be full of parents, people with children, or do you not necessarily want people who have children? How does that work?
I think it would be a definitive factor that you would want to look at as far as your jury pool. You would want men and women who've had children. Now, the other caveat on this is that a young mother around, you know, Casey's age who has young children may be an identifiable juror to Casey. So just because she has a child doesn't mean that automatically I would find her favorable if I was on the prosecution, because she may identify as a young mother with some of the themes that I'm sure the prosecution are going to be putting out there about maybe Casey did this because she didn't want to be a mother anymore. She wanted to go back to a single lifestyle. She wanted to, you know, maybe go out more and have more of a social life. Well, that young mother juror may identify to a certain degree with that mindset, and hence could be unfavorable for the prosecution's case.
For our listeners just joining us, I'm talking with jury consultant Mary Griffith. She is from Texas-based Trial Consulting Enterprises, and she's giving us her expertise based on jury selection as the Anthony trial still to come and the jury selection is underway. What's the most intense trial situation, Mary, that you have ever been in as a jury consultant, where you had to work the hardest to really filter out the undesirables and get the type of jury you wanted for your client?
Well, I think one of the toughest cases is that more and more times now, corporation versus corporation is a tough place to litigate, just because of the recession. What all of most of the American public has been through in their analysis of looking at corporations, and a lot of it is so negative, rightly deserved. But when you're having to defend a corporation in an economic downturn where there's so much evidence out there of, you know, potential greed, potential corruption, it is it's a tougher road to go to make sure that you're getting people who are just going to look at the facts and the evidence in this particular case of what happened.
Typically, a jury consultant who works in the assembling of a jury, how long are they on the job for? In other words, if you accept a contract from your client, are you expected to be there through the whole trial, or only to the setup leading to the trial, the selection of the jurors? How does it generally work?
It depends on the client. I definitely have clients who utilize our services of sort of researching focus groups, mock trials, and all of that stuff, researching it from the front end. And sometimes they know that they're going to settle this case, so the research that they're doing is more important for them to get it on the front end, because they know that they potentially will settle this case later down the road. I also have clients who definitively say, I want you there to, you know, help me pick the jury, and then I want you there to just monitor and make sure that all of the themes and the issues that are really strong and favorable for us are definitely getting out there, because each trial is so different and it's such a dynamic force that sometimes you think that you're going to go one way with something and something happens in the trial and you need to react to that and strategically react to that.
Are you familiar with someone named Joellen Demetrius?
Yes.
We brought Joellen into town, I want to say 7 or 8 years ago, and did one of these town halls with her.
Sure.
It's fascinating, the types of questions that are asked. How do you keep yourself sharp to be a good jury consultant?
Well, you know, one of the things that I think just – doing focus groups and going around the country and doing sort of the attitude surveys and finding out, because what will work in maybe Texas, or what will work in New York, or what will work in California may not work in a Kansas or a Wisconsin or any of those types of venues. And so it's crucial from our point to definitely be very flexible and very proactive in researching the venue in which the case is going to be tried. So how we keep up with, you know, how we try to maintain that system for our clients is making sure that we know where they're going, where they're going to be trying their case, and then doing all of the prep work that we need to do to effectively understand the community in which the trial will be held.
Are you writing a book now yourself?
I am working on it, yes, one of the many things.
Okay. When is that book expected to be done?
Oh, that is a very good question. I'm hoping by the end of 2011.
Okay. Well, you have an invitation to come and join us here, and as we do the law in a town hall forum that we'll be doing part of the President's Speaker Series, I'll be following up. But we appreciate you answering the questions. I learned stuff today, and we've gone through the jury selection thing before. But thanks so much for being with us today on the Mark Bernier Program. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Bye, Mary.
Bye.
Mary Griffiths.